Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So, we got a bit of correspondence from one of our readers again.
Yes, well, the same reader.
The same reader.
That's kind of suggest we've only got one reader.
But yeah, Connor suggested Brick a couple of weeks back, and we didn't like it that much, did we?
No, unfortunately, because we made a big fanfare about that. We finally got round to recording a podcast based on a reader recommendation. And we didn't like it.
Sorry about that. But Connor was very gracious about
it. Yes, he was. Bless him.
He wrote in and said, yeah, actually probably out of the bunch of films you recommended, it was his least favourite.
It was an interesting film.
And interesting.
As we said at the time, the title of the podcast is 101 Films You Should Have Seen, probably. So not every film we watch is a film we should watch. It's
exactly.
Films that have been recommended to us. So thank you, Connor, anyway.
We're definitely doing some of your recommendations. Sunset Boulevard is definitely on the list.
Yes, it
and
is, yeah.
Probably Shadow of a Doubt as well, I think.
Big Lebowski as
and
well.
And Big Lebowski.
Yeah, so plenty to come, Connor. Don't
plenty
worry.
Plenty to come. Keep listening, please.
Well, I just realised I'm going to contradict myself because we've actually got two listeners, because we have another message from Claire.
Oh, yeah, Claire.
This week we had a message from Claire Curl and her recommendations of The French Connection, No Country Old Men, Dead Man's Shoes, Carrie, and Mulholland Drive.
Okay, thanks for your recommendations, Claire. Some really good suggestions there. Ian hasn't actually seen any of those.
No, it's a very good, very good suggestions.
So yeah, we'll definitely do at least some of those. So yeah, thanks a lot for that. And actually, one of them we'll be doing today.
As you'll have seen by looking at the title of the podcast.
Unless you just downloaded this blind and then plugged in your MP3 player and just put it on regardless of what
fact,
it was.
That's what I would recommend to all our listeners out there. They shouldn't actually look at the title. So you should blindfold themselves and then just listen to it completely fresh. So yes, Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, Mulholland Drive.
I have difficulty pronouncing it for some reason. I don't know why. But I keep wanting to call it Mulhound Drive. I don't know why. Mulholland Drive.
I've given up correcting you. I just enjoy it. Just enjoy the mispronouncing.
But Mulholland Drive, I'm always intrigued to watch this. I actually owned this on DVD and I never watched it.
Shocking.
I know. It did come through with a newspaper. That's why I had it. It wasn't I bought it and then now I got around to watching it.
So rich. I just afford to buy DVDs and not watch them.
But it had always been a film I kept on meaning to get around to watching. And so thank you, Claire, for actually forcing me to sit down and watch it. That's the whole point of this damn podcast, is to actually force me to watch these films I keep meaning to get around to watching. And, of course, directed by David Lynch.
David Lynch, yes.
And starring all sorts of people. Naomi Watts.
Yeah, it's a huge cast list.
Laura Harring.
Melissa George. She previously featured in Dark City,
yes.
One of our first podcasts.
And she had quite an impression. She made quite an impression on me and Lewis. You've got Billy Ray Cyrus. You've got all sorts in this film. It's a fantastic
good
cast.
To see Billy Ray Cyrus still in work.
Well, we say that. This film's from 2001. Yeah. I've not seen him in any since.
God, I hope he's not dead.
We'll double check that afterwards.
So quite a surreal film then.
Yes, certainly. An odd film. But, I mean, it is a David Lynch film.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now, before we go on,
yeah,
we should explain. We're going to do our best to not spoil this film.
Mm.
It's going to be a little bit difficult. It's basically, if you want to know nothing at all about the film, obviously don't listen to this podcast. We will avoid major spoilers, but it's very difficult to talk about the film without at least touching on its kind of general feel and the tone of the film.
Yeah, but to be honest, it's a lot of it doesn't really make that much sense. So you kind of it's more kind of a collection of kind of isolated scenes that you can kind of somehow piece together.
Yeah, I think basically if someone had just said the entire plot to me before I watched the film, I still would have been confused, bemused, and enthralled. I don't think it would have made any difference whatsoever.
So yeah, if you haven't seen the film, we're not really spoiling anything.
But I mean, David Lynch, what's your experience of David Lynch?
What's my experience of David Lynch? Well, I've seen a few of his films. I saw Eraserhead, which is probably the most bizarre of
all
of his
films. Yeah, it's one of his most famous.
Yes. Again, I mean, that's just a collection of random kind of images almost.
Yeah.
But again, like Mulholland Drive, compelling. Utterly compelling.
Have you watched Twin Peaks?
I haven't watched Twin Peaks.
No, I've got it on DVD. I got it for a present years ago, and I've never got around to watching it.
Oh, we have to watch that.
Yeah, rats.
We'll do a new podcast, 101 TV shows.
Yeah, well, that will probably almost certainly be the sequel. I feel like we're falling behind. I feel like I'm constantly falling behind with television. I suppose it's nice that we live in an age where there's so much good TV, but I'm constantly thinking, oh, God, really? Another prestigious American TV show that I've not watched? Damn it.
I watched Lost, and I gave up after that. That was about it.
But
I forgot Dune was directed by him. Seen that?
Oh, I've not seen Dune. No, great. So it's all right. But it's weird. Even though I've not, obviously, clearly, I've not seen many David Lynch films, I just know all about David Lynch.
Mm. Well, there's particularly Twin Peaks, there's so many references to it in popular culture.
Definitely, yeah.
Anytime you see kind of a slightly creepy looking dwarf, you know it's a reference to Twin Peaks.
It's interesting because he's such a...
Not just in the street, I should point out. Yes. I mean, if there is just a creepy-looking dwarf wandering around the street, don't just kind of assume it's a Twin Peaks reference. It could just be a creepy-looking dwarf.
Well, it depends. With David Lynch, you never know, do you?
That's perhaps true. You might be asleep.
You might be dreaming. You might be in one of his films.
Okay, if the creepy-looking dwarf is holding a playing card, you are definitely asleep and in a David Lynch film.
And speaks backwards. Yeah. You see, I only get that from The Simpsons. Pretty much all things I've seen are through The Simpsons first and then watch the actual source material that all those references are from afterwards. Anyway, yeah, so David Lynch. For a man who's... Yeah, he's a huge director, but, you know, and well respected, but I guess he probably hasn't influenced that many people. He's still very, very unique. There's certainly not many copycats out there.
Mm. Probably because the studios don't want to finance crazy films like this.
No, I guess not.
It's one of those things. David Lynch has got to where he is. He can make films like Mulholland Drive because he's got that respect of the community that he's built up for so many years, you know, making really kind of small budget films like Eraserhead. But, you know, if you started out now and you started putting all this kind of stuff out there...
Yeah, I don't know, but the same. Just thinking about it, though, in some ways, perhaps Twin Peaks has had an impact on television. David Lynch has actually had a rather large impact on the television dramas. You know, there's quite a few. I mean, you just mentioned Lost, a kind of long series with a central mystery at its heart. I mean, that's what Twin Peaks is, from what I understand. The murder of... Oh, I forget her name now. But the murder of the girl, which is all about Twin Peaks, and it kind of spins off from there. So, in some ways, perhaps, he has had much more of an impact on television rather than films.
Yeah, it's true, I suppose. You know, I mean, the idea of having an unresolved mystery at the core, and lots of really quite surreal happenings, I mean, that's Lost in it in a nutshell, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to that, this film is actually... was originally supposed to be a TV. It was a pilot for a TV show, which I didn't know at all before we actually watched it.
Yeah, I mean, reading about it, it sounds like it kind of evolved from initially the third season of Twin Peaks into a project in its own right.
Yeah, he had an idea for that when he was doing Twin Peaks. And then basically, wasn't it? It was turned down by ABC and then Studio Canal, the French studio, put up the money for him to go back and
thank God they did.
Well, I mean, it's very it's considered one of his best films,
definitely
now.
And like I said, it's compelling. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. It was just amazing. But anyway, before we get too into this,
let's get the trivia quiz out the way. Let's get the trivia quiz done.
Trivia quiz. Trivia quiz.
Trivia quiz. Question one, Lewis. Now, there is a particular character, I'm sure, who we'll talk about a little bit later in the film, called the Cowboy.
Yeah.
The Cowboy. Now, the Cowboy, there is something off about him.
Yeah.
And they did something to his face to give him a slightly unusual feel. What's missing from the Cowboy's face?
I know this. He doesn't have any eyebrows.
Right, okay. Question two. One of the characters in the film is a director called Adam Kesher. And there's a part of the film where he comes out of a meeting, very angry, and smashes up a car. Now, this incident was actually based on a real-life incident involving a famous actor from the Batman film. What actor is that?
Jack Nicholson.
Okay. Was that a guess?
No, I read about it.
Right, okay. And finally, Now, we mentioned earlier that ABC executives rejected the pilot. They rejected it for several reasons, but they had a particular problem with Naomi Watts and Laura Harring, the two stars. Yeah. What was their problem with these ladies?
Ah, they thought they were too old.
Right, okay.
Okay, my turn. So, first question. How did they achieve the unusual appearance of the man in the wheelchair?
I'm going to take a guess that they put... that it's a false body. It's not really actually his whole body. It's his head and
okay.
I use someone else's body.
Okay. Next question.
That's the to anyone who's not seen the film is listening to this is like what?
I must see this film. Okay. Next question. Naomi Watts starred in a 1995 film based on a comic. What was the film?
1995. Oh, it wasn't The Phantom.
I was thinking I should give you another clue because it is quite hard.
Okay.
I feel a bit guilty about this because it's quite obscure. It's not right, The Phantom. Okay. It was drawn by the co-creator of Gorillaz, the original comic.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, okay, it's... oh, God, what's his name? if I get... Will you get half a point if I just describe it?
Describe it, okay.
It's set in, like... Tank Girl. It's yeah. Tank Girl. That's it.
And the last one. The man drinking espresso in the meeting is played by Angelo Badalamenti. What is his other role in the film?
I don't know. I don't know. I know he appears at the end in the kind of in the dinner, when they're all having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
That's it. Okay.
I don't know any other role.
Okay, so what are the answers?
Well, this bang 3 out of 3.
Yes,
you did right. Yes, so to make the cowboy look a bit strange, they shaved off his eyebrows, and it does work. There is something slightly off, and you can't quite put your finger on it, can you?
Yeah, it was only when I read that I was like, of course. I read it on the trivia afterwards.
Adam Kesha smashing up the car is based on Jack Nicholson doing the same in 94.
Bad Boy Jack.
And that's why apparently he's called Mulholland Man.
Seems a little bit of a lame
name. I know, nickname. I've never heard of this nickname, but apparently that's what he's called. Maybe his act friends call him that, who knows. And the ABC executives did reject the pilot, and one of the reasons was they felt that Naomi Watts and Laura Harring were too old for television.
Isn't that mad? That is mad.
Yeah, I mean, they were what, in their early 30s when they did the film?
Craziness. Absolute craziness. They're incredibly hot. What were they thinking?
Yeah, exactly. They're stunningly beautiful. Oh, I don't know. Anyway. Your answers, please, this.
How did they achieve the unusual appearance of the man in the wheelchair? You said fake body. Well, yeah, you're right. It's actually the actor who's played is the dwarf from Twin Peaks.
Yes, yeah.
And they decided they wanted to make him look like he had an unusually small head. So they gave him foam prosthetic arms and limbs.
Yeah.
Arms and legs. And so, yes, he looks a bit strange.
Yes, yeah, it does. It works. There is something strange about him. I did recognise him, though. But, yeah, I was like, but he's not. He's not tiny. It doesn't make any sense. I thought it was something to do with his perspective, perhaps.
Yeah. Naomi Watts starred in 1995 film based on a comic. Yes, you're right, Tank Girl.
Tank Girl.
I used to love that film.
Yeah, I know.
Enjoyed that film.
But you know, when I was like, I couldn't remember it. The way I was just going to describe it was saying it was a girl who drove a tank. Oh, hang on. Tank Girl.
Yeah, Naomi Watts played Subgirl in that film. And then there was a bit of a wilderness for quite some years before she got the role in Mulholland Drive.
Mm, yeah.
And the man drinking the espresso is Angelo Badalamenti. His other role in the film, he's the composer of the soundtrack.
Oh, really?
Yes, and he also did the Twin Peaks soundtrack.
Ah, there you go.
There you go.
Now, it's funny because, you know, talking about it being a TV show that ABC turned down. It's funny because I didn't have any idea that it was actually a cancelled TV show or a potential pilot. And then we were watching it, I sort of said to you how it feels like a television show. In particular, I think it feels like almost like Columbo or something like that towards the beginning. Just there was the way it's shot, it's just really interesting. Like there's just focusing on zooms to the cuts to the eyes of characters reacting to things. just the pace of it is really slow. You see characters getting out of the car, walking down a path, opening a door, going into the house. Which you don't really see now in modern television or films.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. They're kind of these long focus on kind of banal kind of activities.
Yeah, like, you know. Yeah, you see the character's hands opening boxes and putting things in a box and then closing it very carefully. It's strange, and it really does feel like those... those kind of 70s dramas, like Columbo, where that was the nature of television back then, where you did, rather than just cut, you did film people walking from one place to another, to show that that's how they got there. Whereas now I think they assume that the audience is sophisticated enough to kind of work out they didn't instantly disappear and reappear somewhere else.
Yeah.
They can fill in the gap.
Yeah.
Whereas back then they didn't. They were like, okay. And also they padded it out a bit more as well, I think, back then. Now attention spans are so short, they feel...
Well, we're just kind of used to jump cuts, aren't we?
I guess so. Yeah. I guess it's so, perhaps we're just more sophisticated in that one way.
So it's interesting seeing someone kind of go back using that kind of old technique. It's so jarring, and that's what kind of really influences the feel of the picture. And particularly... it changes as it goes through as well. The first half of the film, where it features the characters Rita and Betty, there's a lot of those kind of, you know, long kind of almost kind of lazily kind of flowing kind of cuts where it just stays on the one scene for a long, long time. And in the second half of the film, where it focuses on Diane and Camilla, there's a lot of jump cuts. So you're going immediately from one scene to another with no kind of indication of where the new scene is or anything like that.
It does suit certainly the beginning of the film as well, in particular because Rita, Laura Harring, she is a lost her memory. So there is, like, it has almost a kind of weird, like, so how can you describe it? A sense of, like, not quite knowing what's going on, a sense of, like, slightly dazed and confused, like your head's full of cotton wool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has that kind of almost dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
That has an impact on how you interpret the film much later. Perhaps we'll go into a little bit of that later.
Yeah.
But certainly that, as you say, the kind of long, focusing on little things like it. Yeah, it has that kind of almost, in my mind's eye, when I picture those early scenes, there's almost a soft focus to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything feels slightly wrapped up in cotton wool, like muffled and it's really hard.
A lot of that is achieved through the sound. I mean, the sound is something we really have to talk about, just because it's just so linked to your enjoyment of the film or what's happening on screen. At some points, as you said at that beginning, there's kind of this floaty kind of dream music that really influences how you perceive what's happening, and also at some points there's just kind of really creepy rumbling that just comes in the background, and it's really quite disturbing, you know, particularly that scene with the old couple, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Like there's this old couple, they're just laughing in the back seat of a car, you know, slapping each other's knees, but because he's slowed it down and he's put this kind of really kind of nasty rumbling in the background, it's just so incredibly creepy.
Well, the fascinating thing about that is you see the old couple, you know, literally a minute before that, when Naomi Watts' character, Betty, you know, she arrives in Los Angeles, this perky young girl ready to make it as a film star, gosh damn it. And she's made friends on the flight with this old couple, and it's shot when she sort of steps out, everything's really sunny, and it's like, oh wow, I'm in Los Angeles, and everything's beautiful and amazing. This old couple going, oh, it's so nice to meet you. And they are very like how you want your gran and granddad to look. You know, it's all the kind of like cuddly, lovely old people.
Yeah, kind of cotton wool hair.
And then literally like 30 seconds later, they look devilish and horrific and terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who described this movie to me said it's a mixture between scary, sexy, and funny, in that order.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's David Lynch all over, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
There is that kind of there is a certain eroticism about the whole film. Mm. I mean, it goes out and out erotic.
Erotic night. Welcome to Erotic Night, 101 films.
It certainly gets... this is not a film if you're wanting to watch a film with your parents or perhaps the parents of your girlfriend or boyfriend. Like, should we watch a film? Like, oh, I hear Mulholland Drive's good. Don't do that. There's some very uncomfortable sequences. I felt slightly embarrassed when I was watching it with Lewis. Yeah. So.
Should we be watching this in? Are we grown up enough to watch it?
Well, as we were watching it, my flatmates were out and we were waiting for them. Yeah, I did. They were due home at any moment. And I said, it would just happen. They would walk in just as the sexy bit was on TV. So it just looked like me and you were watching a sexy film together.
Walks into the room, raises an eyebrow, takes a swig of his cup of coffee, and then walks out of the room.
But yeah, so yeah, you're right. Kind of sexy, scary. And it is scary as well. Mm. I suppose the predominant feel to the film is dreamlike.
Yeah.
It feels... Sometimes it feels... It has an oddness to it that dreams have.
Yeah. Well, you didn't really get... going back to a few podcasts, Inception, you felt that it didn't really capture the feel of dreams at all.
Yeah.
But this film does.
Totally, yeah. This film definitely feels like a dream. Mm. They kind of... characters change roles as the film goes on. Mm. And that kind of, that happens in dreams.
Yeah.
You know, like where, you know, like, oh, it's my gran, but, you know, she doesn't look like my gran and it does in real life, but I know it's my gran. Or, oh, I'm in my school, but actually it looks like a factory for some reason, but I know it's my school. Mm. You know, you it's strange. Your mind in dreams changes things. You kind of go along with that. And this had that quality, that sense of, things were slightly pliable.
Yeah, definitely. You can have the same scene with different characters repeated again. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fascinating film. Like, you really do get drawn into the whole mystery of it. You know, what's going on? What links these characters? You know, what's the real story? What's reality? What's dream?
And I think the very fact that it was supposed to be a TV pilot ends up adding to that dreamlike quality for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, as a pilot, they introduced lots of characters that would perhaps have got roles or got storylines in a series, but they don't in the film. So characters introduced are never really referred to ever again.
Yeah.
So, for example, like the TV detectives? The two detectives who are investigating Rita's disappearance. Mm. In the film when we're watching it, I was like, oh, okay, so you know they're gonna have a big role as they try and find Rita. They never crop up again.
Never again. Yeah. I remember they first came and I was like, oh god, it's Robert Forster, brilliant, I love him. Never saw him again.
But of course, if that was a TV show, they definitely would have had their own storyline. They would have had their own episode, which is all about them. And that adds again because in dreams, like, oh yeah, you were there, and then you just walked out the room, and you disappeared. Yeah, like yeah, it's dreams have that. People are there and then they're not, The storyline, and I'm just putting that in inverted commas, of your dreams does change halfway through. Mm. You know, like, oh, it started off I was in work, but then suddenly, like, there was a dragon outside. And, it totally will change within the dragon, and they just flow on together. Mm. And I think because it had to introduce those characters, it adds to that dreamlike quality. Also, I believe that when David Lynch went back to film the new scenes to kind of turn it into a film. Mm. ABC had got rid of all the costumes, and they got rid of all the sets.
Right.
And they had to kind of start from scratch. So that, again, means there are certain bits of the film which are then completely different.
Mm.
And that adds to that, again, where things will just totally change in a dream, and you just go with it. So, through kind of necessity being the mother of invention, it kind of forced David Lynch to go even more down that road. And it really works.
That's interesting.
It's a confusing film, isn't it? It's an
It's confusing, but like I said, you feel like there is something there.
Yeah.
There's something there. It's not a complete random, you know, mix of images. You know, there is a plot of sorts, but it's just... It feels like it's almost tantalisingly close that you could link it all together if you just knew one thing or something like that.
Well, I mean, we don't want to set our listeners against each other and compare Claire's recommendation to Connor's recommendation, but...
But you're about to.
No, well, what I was going to say, because in the last film we complained that we got annoyed because we couldn't work out what was going on a lot of the time. But that was more, I think, I mean, at our heart, we kind of blame the sloppiness of the filmmaking for that, you know, dialogue being muttered.
Mumblecore. Yeah. I really hate mumblecore.
And whereas in this film, we spent a lot of the film not knowing what was going on, but we still enjoyed it and we were still drawn into it. And we still were really interested in what was happening. As you say, at the end, there isn't really any answers.
No.
Yet I came away still quite satisfied from the film.
And wanting to watch it again as well, which is a good sign.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, very good film. The cowboy. We have to mention the cowboy. You mentioned him in the trivia quiz.
Yeah, he came up in the trivia quiz. Yeah, the cowboy. Now, the scary couple are a kind of standout, strange. David Lynch has this, doesn't he? He has quite a few, like, as you mentioned, the weird backwards-talking dream dwarf from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
What's in Eraserhead? What happens in Eraserhead? Doesn't someone give birth to a...
Is
it a headless chicken? I'm like, what?
There's some sort of animal.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, he often has films where, or in Existence, you have...
I remember this. Existence isn't by David Lynch, it's by David Cronenberg.
Oh, no.
I made that mistake as well. We'll just have to run
with it. Well, that's embarrassing. Everyone at home is laughing at us now. Oh, no.
They're quite similar, though.
We'll keep it in. We'll show our fallibility to our listeners.
Yeah. We're not almighty film gods that stride the earth like colossal.
How many other film podcasts would get that quite basic fact completely and utterly wrong?
Well, they are both called David.
Exactly. Both a bit weird. All right, yeah. Well, that's good, because I was just about to say, any existed, and then I couldn't think of any kind of stand-up characters. Well, obviously, because it's David Cronenberg, not David Lynch. But in David Lynch, in Twin Peaks you also had the woman with the log lady or the log woman.
It's log, it's better than bad, it's good.
But I don't know what that was.
Spirin and Stimpy.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't really watch it much when that. But anyway.
That'll be on 100 TV shows you should see.
Anyway, before we jump out, we won't be doing that until like 2014, 2015 at our rate. Yeah, so you've got the scary couple in this, and you've got the cowboy, a character who, again, his role's slightly ambiguous. He's a weird, odd, almost kind of mystical character.
Mm.
I can't really tell you what his role in the film is.
I don't really know.
No.
he does seem to be kind of a character that's pulling strings behind the scenes.
Yes, it seems that way. He crops up a couple of times, once to kind of give a warning to one character, and then towards the end of the film, he kind of crops up again.
He does seem to be a kind of a metaphor for kind of Hollywood manipulating things from behind the scenes.
I don't know. I don't know what... Yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, I guess. Mm. I'm not sure it is that, though. I don't know. Yeah, he's ambiguous.
You'll bring a reincarnated?
Well, it's not clear if he's good or evil. Mm. Yeah, it's...
Definitely evil.
Do you think? I don't know. I mean, you don't really know why everything's happening in the first place, do you? So
God, so many questions, so little
time. It is. But it definitely great. I mean, as soon as I kind of laughed when he kind of steps. They kind of meet him for the first time in the corral in the middle of nowhere, and he just steps out of the darkness, and he's just like got this huge hat. He's got quite a small guy. He's got this massive 10-gallon cowboy hat, kind of a coat that's almost too big for him, a kind of checkered coat.
Yeah,
he's like, howdy. And he does make quite an impact when you first see him.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to talk about is this film's kind of division of Hollywood. It's quite a cynical, I think, vision of Hollywood. Like you said, perhaps the cowboy is a kind of representative of that kind of studio interference in something. But yeah, it's, you know, like you've got Naomi Watts' character being all perky and like, I'm going to make it in this city of dreams. And of course, and that dreamlike quality, you know, it's, you know, Hollywood's called La La Land, you know, it all kind of, well, in my head anyway, I don't know if it actually is supposed to, but it does seem to sort of tie together the fact that it's kind of weird and dreaming and not quite, a kind of weird sense of reality, and it seems to suit Los Angeles very well, and Hollywood in particular.
It's interesting the way the film transitions from the beginning, you know, like you said, Naomi Watts' character is this, you know, perkier than... I love the word perky. She's perky. She's a perky character from a small town, come to Hollywood to make it big. And she deliberately kind of underacts, you know, in a way. It's like, it's a really forced kind of... cheesy kind of acting. And then as her character develops over the film, she actually becomes a lot darker and a lot kind of, you know, the acting gets better as it goes along.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
But obviously that's a very deliberate thing. And also, you know, the first audition she has is with these kind of really old kind of directors in the business. And then this kind of slick suited woman in the corner. And as soon as they're finished the audition, you know, these lovely people are saying, oh, you're so good and all that. And the woman's like, yeah, they'll never get that film made, you know. And then it's kind of almost the transition from the lovely kind of reassuring kind of homely world of what Hollywood should be to the kind of slick kind of reality.
Yeah.
Manipulation behind the scenes of what it actually is like.
I mean, Hollywood was always like that. It's not like it was, you know, it's always been a place which chews people up and spits them out. As me and Lewis well know, with our aborted attempt to go to Hollywood in 2005, we never speak of it. but the director of the film, Adam Kesher, played by Justin Theroux. It is, isn't it? Yeah, Justin Theroux. And he, to me anyway, he just, I don't know if this is done on purpose, but he kind of has the kind of slightly cool, black, messy hair. He wears sunglasses the whole time. Mm-hmm. He just, for some reason, carries around a golf club with him. And he does seem like almost a cliched, like, cool 90s director. As soon as I saw him, I straight away thought of Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, yeah.
He has that kind of feel to him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he is also being pushed around by these kind of cynical Hollywood forces.
Yes, shady people in the background who may or may not be mobsters, and of course all controlled by small-haired, long-armed wheelchair man.
I suppose when you see him, you kind of think of, what's his name? Who was the guy who went mad, lived in, he was an aviator, made films as well.
Oh, Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes, that's it. I think that's who, because he used to, when they speak to the guy in the wheelchair, he's kind of behind a glass screen.
Yeah.
He won't speak to anyone directly.
I love that bit. It's a shame he didn't pop up in it more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I guess, in a TV series, he would have done. Mm. But in this kind of one-off film, you just get like these glimpses of these bizarre, weird characters. And then you're left wanting more. Maybe that is, at its heart, the reason behind the success of this film. That even though it's strange and obtuse and you're not sure what's going on, at the end, you want to watch more.
Yeah.
If only that TV series would have been made.
It would have been good, wouldn't it?
It would have been, yeah. It would have been fantastic.
Apparently, one of the other reasons that they didn't make it, apart from the fact that they thought Naomi Watts and Laura Hassing were too old, madness, was that it featured a close-up of dog feces at one point.
Does it?
Apparently. I mean, they must have taken it out for the final cut. There was that and Anne Miller smokes in it. And they were like, nope, she's smoking on screen, can't do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I know. Idiots. That's why TV is now a wasteland.
Yeah.
All those ABC executives were fired and replaced by...
That is funny when you think that Mad Men is on ABC, and Mad Men pretty much is consistently... It's just one long giant cigarette. Yeah, there is barely a character that goes by who doesn't smoke and drink.
Crazy.
That shows how different television was in perhaps the late 90s.
Yeah.
You know, where that kind of... how bland perhaps television was then compared to now.
I got this new vehicle. It's for Lisa Kudrow from France.
I mean, there is still quite a bit of that. But again, just goes to show how David Lynch was way ahead of his time with things like Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Still, TV is still catching up in many ways.
Yeah. So, weak points. Do you feel there's any particular weaknesses with the film?
It's difficult to say, isn't it? Because, like, it's so odd that, you know, stuff that you would think, oh, well, that's not good, is like, oh, that's being done on purpose, you know?
Well, do you think, though, there is an argument that could be made that this is very much Emperor's New Clothes? That if we are kind of like, it's so bizarre, we feel almost like there's more there than actually there is. Yeah, David Lynch is famously, you know, never given... never told the what actually is behind this, what the real story is, what actually happens in the film. Now, is that because he wants to keep the mystery, so we people like us will keep talking about it, or perhaps he just doesn't know?
Yeah.
And the fact that everyone's talking about it goes, oh yeah, there is a reason, there is something there. If you know where to look, the whole film is explained. So everyone's, oh, brilliant, okay. When actually it is perhaps just a string of weird random occurrences, scenes.
I think, to be honest, I don't think David actually knows what it's about. And I don't think he did when he was filming it. He might have made up a reason since, but I genuinely don't think that he actually knew what it was about. He just had a series of images and things that he wanted to film, and he put them on celluloid.
Well, not to go into real detail, but the film progresses in a certain way, and then about two-thirds in, suddenly does a handbrake turn and completely changes. Mm-hmm. And then right at the end, the film goes very strange and very odd. And, when the credits just it ended, the credits came up, I was just like, right. Okay.
But, I mean, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's compelling.
Yeah, it is. Compelling. Yeah, I know, I totally agree. Yeah,
Like I said, I don't think there actually is kind of a hero meaning, but there's certainly things you could guess at. You can kind of think, oh, well, it could be this or it could be that, you know. I don't think any of them is actually the right reason. I don't think there is a right kind of thing, you know. It could be a kind of repeated loop. It could be a parallel universe. It could be a dream sequence. It could be this woman imagining something. I mean, there's loads of things it could be, but I don't think there is a right answer. I think it's more like, I've made this thing, just have fun guessing. And that's what's compelling about it. You just want to kind of solve the mystery, even though you know it's unsolvable.
No, I totally agree. You're right. It is, as I said, even though it's odd, strange, obtuse, and yeah, it's never annoying. You're never like, well, I certainly wasn't, or perhaps other people would be, but I didn't go, well, this is just irritating now. Why, another bizarre thing's happening. Instead, I was just like, oh my God, another bizarre thing's happening. What could this mean? I guess that marks it as a success.
Yeah, it's good.
So, would you recommend this?
Definitely, yeah. Watch it. It's fantastic.
Yes, and as a man who's never seen it before, this is, oh, we didn't mention that, did we?
Neither of us had seen this before.
No, sorry. So, an excellent selection. Excellent selection.
You are spoiling us.
A great.
It's a bit erotic, though.
Yeah, it did. Just we're heading down Mulholland Drive.
It's erotic nights of 101 films.
It was a film I think both of us did want to watch, and thank you for suggesting it and forcing us to sit down and watch it, because I think we both thoroughly enjoyed it. Right, so.
So, yeah, if you want to get in touch and tell us your film recommendations, write to 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
Check out the blog at 101films.wordpress.com, and from there you can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.
So that's all. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Silencio. No hay espanda.
Was it no hay espanda? No, it's no hay banda. It's not.